Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
Tom and Mick, hello.
Hello.
Hello! Hey! Welcome to 2022!
We've done it. We've done it.
Somehow we got here. What happened these last 2 years didn't exist.
It didn't. We took a time-traveling jalopy from early 2020. So if anything weird's happened, please don't tell us.
That car that went up in Greece and then came back down again.
That's us.
It came back down in 2022.
That's us. This is, I think, the third time we're doing a top five watching list of the year. I think a third.
Yeah. We're pretty tight at it.
Hey, we know what we're doing.
Look at us.
We know. I've got five, and I reckon there's a good chance I've got one or two that you guys will have as well. But we'll roll with the punches. Whoever says it first, that's the one we go with. You can take part in that conversation, I reckon. Sure.
I want to say mine is not in a order of best to worst or anything like that. And my things this year are things I've enjoyed. They've made me feel good.
Yeah, good.
Rather than a best.
Mm. I don't think it should be. I think, you know, everyone enjoys different things and you need different sorts of content to make you feel better.
Yeah.
And this year everyone's been avoiding the real heavy, you know, intense, sad stuff because you don't need that. We've got enough of that in real life.
What kind of dickhead decided this was the time to rewatch like 6 Feet Under? You know what I mean? People would have.
People did?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
You know what I started watching a bit of, which I realized when I was watching, I hadn't actually seen the whole show, United States of Tara.
Mm. Oh, I like that show.
It's not on my list. I'm just saying, yeah. And it's funny because in my mind it feels like it didn't finish that long ago, but when you watch it, you're like, oh, this is old.
Yeah.
Very young Brie Larson.
Yes.
Oh, I forgot she was in
that. That's pre-Community.
Yeah, she's like a teenager. It's amazing. But we're getting sidetracked.
We are already.
Mick, I would like you to go with your number five.
All right, we're going to kick it off. And similar to Tom, these are things that I enjoyed for what they are.
And
I've got a mixture of TV, music, and games.
Perfect.
But we're going to start with TV, and TV is where it's at this year. I'm going way back to the start of 2021 to a thing that I think a lot of people forgot actually came out in 2021.
Gosh, am I going to remember it?
No, you will, because it was pretty big.
Okay.
But I'm talking about It's a Sin. This is a show that blew me away, and it blew a lot of people away. And yes, it's quite intense and it's quite sad, but this is a show about the 80s and the HIV epidemic that basically went through the homosexual community.
We're
talking back in the and I was a kid when this happened, and I remember the bowling alley and the Grim Reaper and the ball, and it was like traumatic.
It's very scary. I couldn't watch that ad.
But I think a lot of people growing up nowadays, talking millennials, we're talking Gen whatever Zeds are up to now, they don't know a lot about that. They don't know a lot about what AIDS was and how big a deal it was.
And how scared the world was.
Exactly. We've got the epidemic now, or pandemic, which has happened. But AIDS was like, it just scared the crap out of everybody. And all of a sudden, if you were a gay person, you know, it was like you were excluded from community.
Yeah.
And you don't really know what that was like unless you were there or then. But so this show tries to recreate that. And it is an amazing, amazing show. It's done by Russell T. Davies, who you know from Queer as Folk, but he also relaunched Doctor Who in like 2005. He did Torchwood. And then more recently he did a show called Years and Years, which I might have talked about 2 years ago.
Oh, was that Emma Thompson?
Yeah. And it was like it sort of jumped ahead into the future.
Yeah, that's right.
Trying to predict what would happen, and, you know, scarily accurately as well, if you go back and look at it, because, you know, he's predicting pandemics and he's predicting robotics and, you know, AI. And there's a girl in the show who gets like an implant in her head where she can start seeing things through eyes.
Awesome.
And, you know, it all goes horribly wrong. But, you know, this is something that probably happen one day. So, this guy's got a really good pedigree in TV, and It's a Sin is very personal to him because it's, you know, stuff that he grew up with as well in the 80s. And the big thing about this is he got Ollie Alexander to be the main character. This is a real weird link. Ollie Alexander is the lead singer of a band called Years and Years, who no one really knew was a great actor, but all of a sudden came into this show and was just like, outstanding. And he made this character his own, and it was very personal to him as well. And So yeah, the characters, the acting, the story was just brilliant, and this show just sort of kicked off 2021. Not on a very happy note, mind you, but it's kept it.
You know, it stayed with you.
Yeah, totally, and just an amazing, amazing show. And I think it's one of these shows which is just going to be one season. I think it was supposed to be 8 episodes. I think it was 6 in the end.
Okay.
So it was a bit cut down due to funding and stuff. But, you know, what they did produce and what they put to air was worthwhile. So, yeah.
It's funny that you said, oh, this was from the beginning of the year. So we joked about how it's hard to cast our mind back to then. But I remember going, oh, I'll watch that soon. I completely forgot about it, but maybe I can do it during January. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's worth watching. Yeah, and I think it'll stand up as being a real, you know, groundbreaking show.
Yeah,
for a lot of younger people as well who didn't know about that stuff.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Tom, what's on your list?
I'm gonna kick my things off talking about Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous, which is aimed at kids. I'm too hungover. I can't say abstention.
It's the beginning of January. What do you expect? Come on.
I have loved the hell out of this show. Now, it kicked off late last year, or September last year is when it had its first season. We've had 3 seasons this year, each between 8 and 11 episodes. And it kind of has the same vibe for me as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Marvel show that was on years ago, where the first season was fine. And then there's some event that happens that flips the show on its head, and then what happens after there is where it gets great. And that's kind of what's happened with this show. So it starts with 6 kids that are on an adventure camp on Jurassic World on the other side of the island as the events of Jurassic World take place. And they don't make it to the boat to get off the island.
Uh-oh. Mm.
And the 6 kids are left, and all adults that were with them are killed.
Can I ask a stupid question initially? What – would anyone think that was a good idea to have a camp on an island of dinosaurs?
It's basically kids doing like a Duke of Edinburgh.
Oh, okay.
It's that sort of vibe. Okay. So it's a holiday camp for kids. Yeah. They stay in a big tree house up the top. So once things go wrong, they are set up to be self-sustaining for a while.
I kind of think that Prince Philip, aka the Duke of Edinburgh, would have been behind. Like he would have backed this. He would have gone, yes, they need to learn. Yeah.
So that's the initial concept of stuff. And season one is about trying to basically make it to the boat in time, and they don't.
Wow.
And then this year we've had the 3 seasons, and some amazing guest actors have popped up in various roles. You've had Bradley Whittaker in there for a while, Stephanie Beatriz. The season that dropped last week has got Kirby Hall-Batiste from Good Place and Haley Joel Osment, who I'm a huge fan of. But the last season saw them finally get off the island, and they were on a massive boat that some
someone remembered. Oh, remember those kids that were on the island? Oh, we better go back and get them.
Well, no, some hunters came to the island to poach, big game hunting.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
And they get off, and so the kids try and take the boat. And basically the Mosasaurus, which was the big water-based in the storm, got out and knocks their boat way off course.
Uh-oh.
And they don't know where they've landed. And the thing that's great about this show is, as I say, it started within the timeline of the films, and it's branched off and doing its own thing. Now, this season 4 that's dropping now was produced with the knowledge of Jurassic World Dominion was supposed to be out by now.
Oh.
So it feels like it's delving into the realm of what we're going to get in this film, which is the code for making dinosaurs is now open source. It's out there. And so there's a tech bro who's clearly meant to be a Zuckerberg, who's got an island.
Of course he does.
And he's set up like virtual reality biomes. There's winter, desert, a couple of jungle ones.
Sounds like a video game.
It is. Well, because he's only growing these dinosaurs to make them fight.
Ooh,
and he's going to make it for,
always end well.
Like cockfight.
It's for the rich and famous. It's a privileged island to come and watch dinosaurs battle to the death.
Oh, it's got like Westworld kind of.
Yep. And there are robots called Brads that are the security system. They're like dogs that go around and incinerate anything. So the kids are on the run from these robots stuck in virtual reality stuff. They find pipes that connect everything. This show has gotten really weird, and it's so strayed from the path of some kids stuck in a theme park. I have no idea where it's going next. It's great.
That sounds fun.
Keeps you going. Keeps you going.
And the scares are enough that you know, it keeps you on your seat a little bit, but it's also very appropriate for you know, a 10-year-old kid.
Rad.
Yeah.
So that's season four.
Yes, and that's on Netflix, and season four dropped just a few days ago. Cool. And I imagine at some point in the next week or so, we'll hear about a season five.
What are these so quick seasons, like 10 episode seasons?
Isn't yeah.
Like, but they're releasing multiple
in
a year.
They must be churning them, you know.
That's full on. Why not make them like one big long season or two? Well, like, it just seems strange.
Because they get a lot more conversation out of it if they drop one, in, you know, one season in February, then in – you know, June, oh, then
the
another one.
In one go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not drip fed. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah.
Mm. Fair enough.
I think if it was aimed just at little kids, they'd drop everything. Like, that's what they do with Sesame Street and the other shows on Netflix where it's for kids, it's drop everything at once. But this, they know adults watch a lot. They did the same thing with the Transformers. They did, you know, the Earthrise trilogy. Mm-hmm. They broke it up rather than dropping everything. They did six episodes of Siege, then Earthrise, then whatever the can't remember.
And the other one.
Yeah.
Look, my top, well, not my top five, my number five is a video game. Ooh. Because this year, and I think I've told this story, I saw a tweet saying, I can't even remember who I bought it from, one place is allowing people to put their name on a waiting list for a PS5. I was like, okay. And they said it'll come out in October. This is like July, I think. 2 weeks later, a missed call from a number. I'm like, I'm ignoring the hell out of that number. And then saw an email from, you know, it was EB Games. That was it. It was EB Games saying, we've got a PS5 if you want it. We're trying to chase you up.
I'm gold.
Like, so I went and got it, and I got a couple of games, and one of them was Assassin's Creed Valhalla, the one where you're the Viking, right? You know I love open games, open world games, and I've only played one Assassin's Creed before. It was the one where you're the pirate.
Black Flag.
I don't think I finished it.
Favorite.
But it was – what I didn't like is that – it wasn't the actual world, like you're just in a simulation, and I didn't like that, so I chose to ignore it. And I'm choosing to ignore that aspect of this game as well. I am actually a Viking, and I don't care what the main canon story lore is.
Fuck off
is.
Desmond and all that.
I don't want anything to do with that. So you're playing Eivor, and you can choose Eivor to be a boy or a girl. So clearly I've gone a girl, right? I'm like, girl Viking, going to take over England. Mm. Hell yeah. But then I heard later on that the boy, like the guy, voice actor, does a much better job. But I'm too far into it. And I like the fact that I am a female running around just looting poor monasteries in England. I can't go back because you can switch, right? You can switch. But I'm not going to switch because if I switch, then it's not real.
Sure, you're breaking the rules you've imposed.
Exactly. What I like about this game is you can have, you know, the main story, which you only spend a fraction of time on, right, because you're going out and doing all these other things. But they've got these bits on the map called mysteries. Now, these could be you take magic mushrooms and you start seeing ancient Nordic gods, right?
Standard.
Awesome. Yeah. Or it could be someone who has locked themselves into their hut because there are wolves around.
Yep.
Or a ridiculous story where you start bobbing for apples. Like, all it's just brilliant. And once you go up to them, you don't know what you're going to get, right? You have no idea. And I just have enjoyed not having to think about the world, just running around being a Viking. It's brilliant.
Yes.
I love it.
I completely hear you, and I'm very excited about that. And now I need a PS5.
It's very good.
I mean, I skipped the PS4. I've got a PS3 still sitting in underneath my TV. But I've been thinking about PS5, and
they're bloody big.
We're both on team PS5.
Yeah. I've got to jump on.
Mm.
Can you even buy them anymore yet?
Yeah. Look, you can go on waitlist. I did actually see EB posted this morning that you can order a Xbox X for Christmas.
Oh.
It'll be here by Christmas.
Okay.
So the backlog must be starting to catch up.
I mean, this is getting off track, but why is it so hard to produce PS5s?
I think it's the chip shortage.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Okay.
Yep.
Cars, everything having issues with. Yeah.
And that's affecting like everything, like CPUs for computers and
cars everything.
And everything.
And also I feel like it's also the pandemic because people are stuck at home and they've discovered gaming and now they're in that world that they want to get the next thing, which is the PS5 or Xbox Series progression, now there's more people trying to get the ones that are available. It's crazy though, right?
Is that Assassin's Creed? Is that like the new? Is it only on PS? Or like, is that the only way?
I'm pretty sure you can get it on a PC. Okay,
so it's not exclusive.
You can get it on Steam, I'm sure.
Can you? Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't played Assassin's Creed since 2, maybe.
There you go.
So, you know.
It'll be very different.
I'm sure
it will be. It's a very different game to work. Yeah. You don't climb towers anymore, is that right?
No.
You can climb towers, but they're not always towers. It's
not for vantage points, though, is it?
No, the reason you would is to get the surround.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then do the eagle dive off.
Yeah.
I don't know why I went, what happened to my voice then?
Yeah. Number 4.
All right. Let's get into this. What have we got next? Well, look. Yes. Let's do it.
Just do it. Go on.
We're going to discuss it at some point.
Do it.
Okay. Squid Game.
Sure.
I had to bring it up.
Had to happen.
It had to happen. It is now the number one Netflix show of all time. There is something like 1.6 billion hours of viewing.
I can't even comprehend that.
Which, if you translate that to years, is 182,000 years.
I still can't comprehend that. That's insane.
Like, this is it's been the cultural phenomenon of 2021.
Yeah.
Really. And
yeah.
And I didn't jump on it straight away because I was sort of like, I don't know, it looks a bit freaky, like a bit like, you know, gory. I was also like, I don't love gory stuff. And I just felt like it was a little bit dystopian and like.
Especially for this year.
I wasn't feeling it like at first.
Yeah.
But I must admit that peer pressure pushed me over the line and I started watching it. And then once I started watching it, I was like, ooh, okay, I get this now and I want to keep watching it. But I spaced it out. Like I watched it over a period of like 2 months.
Sure.
I couldn't binge that stuff.
Like, it's too much.
You cannot. If you binge Squid Game, you are there's something wrong with your head.
Yeah.
Okay. Or maybe there is now after you've binged it. I don't know.
Kind of like Black Mirror, right? You can't watch more than one episode.
Even that. Remember that one with the choose your own adventure?
Yep.
Black Mirror.
That was Bandersnatch.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. That was intense.
Yeah. That was full on as well. So I think Tom, you pointed this out about Squid Game. If anything, it's great that now we're going to get a whole heap of more Korean.
Oh yeah, because we've already had Hellstorm, whatever. There's that one's come out, and that's from the director of Train to Busan. I've been banging on about how good South Korean film is since about 2006, but 2008 was when it hit big for me, which with
was
the host.
Snowpiercer?
No, Snowpiercer was until 2013 or something like that. It was quite a way off. No, there's been some fantastic stuff there, and the weirder the better. They have one called The Good, the Bad, and the Weird that is a Western set in like the early 1900s China.
Oh.
And so the Native American Indians are the Huns, and all like it's
wow.
I feel like South Korean TV and cinema is a lot more experimental, diverse, like they're willing to try.
Oh, big time. Look,
very different genres.
A big part is the story structure difference between Eastern and Western culture. We always adhere to the Joseph Campbell's 12 steps. There has to be a heroic journey. You have to have resolution at the end, a heroic ending, this sort of stuff. In a lot of Eastern storytelling, the second you feel yourself to become the protagonist, the life will smack you down.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of the storytelling is reinforcing the idea of stay in your lane and do not step above your station.
Yeah.
And that's so much of what South Korean film, it really encapsulates that idea of life does not have endings, happy endings or endings whatsoever. So don't expect that in narrative.
Mm.
And it just constantly blows Western people's minds.
I
love it.
I think because, like Snowpiercer and I think Hollywood's making Train to Busan for some reason.
Oh, yes.
I don't know why.
And
I think
it's Chicago to New York or something like that on a bullet train.
So with Squid Game, though, I think, there's going to be huge Hollywood production companies, movie studios who want to remake older Korean stuff, maybe even like folklore stuff. But I think because Netflix has had such a win with Squid Game. We're going to get more of that kind of stuff as well.
And they've like been trying
new stuff.
Yeah, they've been trying for a while. So they did Okja a couple of years ago, and they
got an Oscar nom.
Yeah. So they've done some really impressive stuff, and they're trying to blur the lines between Hollywood and South Korea.
Parasite, getting them working together. Parasite was amazing. Maybe this is just a time when Korean TV and cinema is going to be just going gangbusters.
I hope so because you know, there was a period there where Japan was where it was at for horror movies and this sort of stuff, and Western culture pillaged that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we will hit that point with South Koreans, and there's just, you know, they do noir really well and
– oh, don't tell the Scandinavians.
Well, you reckon they're done,
gritty
their
time's murders done. And crimes and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, they love that bit. Stuff. Yeah, it's all a bit. Tom, what about you? What's your fourth?
My fourth, I'm going to give to one that if you'd asked me at the time when I first watched it, probably would be sitting in my number one spot. But now, upon reflection later, it's a bit of a difficult one, which is Bo Burnham's Inside. And
really?
This was a Netflix special.
Down.
Well, I'll explain why. So it was a Netflix special in the middle of the year, and it blew my mind. And I'd been waiting for it for a while because Bo Burnham's awesome, and he quit doing stand-up or any sort of performance a couple of years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, and went and directed a movie, acted in a movie. It looked like he'd changed his career and stuff. And then so to come out with a comedy special in the middle of the pandemic was like, what the hell has he done? So if you haven't seen it, this is where he's locked in at home, just like everyone else at the time. He filmed it in 2020, and it's the idea is that he was basically locked in a small room out the back of the house for a year. Wasn't really the case. He was living in and out. It was his girlfriend's house, and she lives in the house that was in Nightmare on Elm Street. So all this, anyway. So great songs. He self-produced films, does all the special effects, everything. It is a mind-blowing exercise, but it hit at a time where in America, everyone was coming out of the pandemic and were being forced to go back outside. And that's the journey of this story of a guy who, you know, he started his career. He was one of the first YouTube comedians and stuff. He started his career as a teenager stuck in a bedroom and doing things from there. And it's like, hey, it's been 15 years. What the fuck is happening that I'm back stuck in this room?
Yeah.
And coming to terms with, you know, his life hadn't moved on as much as he thought. But then on the flip of that of, you know, actually I'm far more mature and I'm ready to deal with this and this sort of stuff. So at the time, it was mind-blowing because we here in Australia were in lockdown. And so watching someone who was coming out of lockdown was hopeful. And I bought the soundtrack and I listened to it way too much. And it was the only thing I listened to for about 6 weeks. And it got to the point where the songs were depressing. And the hope had pulled out of it for me and stuff like that. And, you know, we were still stuck in that lockdown for so much longer afterwards that I now have this weird relationship with of it's amazing, but I can't watch it now. I can't listen to the songs because it takes me back to that moment. It puts me back in that mindset.
Yeah.
So that's why I say it's this weird thing that it deserves the number one spot because as a singular vision, creative execution, everything, this guy did absolutely everything involved. He didn't really. I'm sure there was editing and us stuff.
Yeah.
But the purpose, like the whole thing is look what I did. This is, you know, some people learned to cook, some people got into making bread, whatever. During my lockdown, I wrote a musical, basically.
Yeah.
Performed it and did it myself. But it's so entwined to emotions and feelings and stuff that I had at that moment that I can't go back to it. So that's why it drops back. It drops down because the other stuff on my list is fucking comfort food.
Now, it's funny that you say that you can't think about it without those emotions coming up. And Mick, you know, you love music a lot. And we know that you can listen to a song that you listened to in 2010, right? And you love that album or the song or whatever. And listening to it for the first time since then, like you get transported not back to when, but transported to back to how you felt. And I think it's happened in such a small like bubble concentrated time for you that's what's happened. It's the music. It has to be the music, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's not the visuals of it. It's from listening to it all the time.
Yeah.
I have a Korn song that I can put on and I can be back walking pissed off after school one day to the bus station. So it's exactly that thing of you can transport yourself.
Is it All Day I Dream About Sex?
No, but it's a good pick. It was it's Freak on a Leash.
Good one. Just checking.
But yeah, it's such a weird relationship I have with it now because it's mind-blowing stuff and it's so well done. Mm. And the mystique of it is still there because he's refused to talk about it. He hasn't done any interviews. He hasn't explained.
Really?
No, nothing.
Wow.
I don't think he will now. No, I think he's too far.
And he's an Aota, he's an artist, and he's like, this is for everyone to interpret. And it TikTok fell in love with it and pulled it apart, and it became a cultural moment thing. And so he's respecting that and refuses to comment and confirm or deny anything to do with it. So
love it.
I do too. Amazing. My number four is a film, the film that I went to the movie theater to see.
Whoa!
Yeah.
You did that?
Brief moment in time. I went and saw A Quiet Place 2, and I think because I was able to go to the movies, I think that's why it's up on my list, because having that wonderful experience of this film that relies so heavily on sound or lack of, depending on, you know, where in the story it is, getting to have that surround sound whilst that was happening was brilliant. And, you know, I actually went to see it with Nabil, and we had a great time because like me, it was the first film that he'd seen in ages, and the vibes of being in a movie theater, you know, with a friend that you both know you like watching film or whatever, it was great. So for me, even though the story is quite stressful, like the first one, for me, I've got like nice memories.
Popcorn.
Yeah, exactly. That smells.
Yes. I completely agree. And I completely forgot that was the first movie I saw out of Locked Up as well. And I thought that, seeing it in the cinema, even though everyone's going to be quiet, it's this insulated room. It's probably better to see. It's dark, you know.
Agreed.
It did work well in the cinema, and it was worth, I mean, be that being the one to come back to, I reckon. Yeah, I agree.
Just before we got locked in again.
Ah, yes.
Tom, did you ever actually see it?
I saw it at home, but I did it with the headphones, which is how I'd done the first film. The first film I watched on flight, which was terrifying. It was the middle of the night. Everyone was asleep and I had to that sort of thing. So I was trying to recreate that as best as I could and watched it at home on the iPad, but with the headphones. It was great. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a good one. And
look forward to the next.
That's what I was about to say. I have a feeling there's going to be more.
There were dumb decisions, like all those stupid movies. Don't leave the safe place to go
Why
and find
are
her.
You doing
oh my
that?
God.
Got to sing about it because it makes me angry.
I always get frustrated at how quickly they suggest that people will go feral.
Feral
American. Kids.
Yeah,
sure.
That's true. It could be a cultural thing.
American listeners.
Very easy.
Yeah, I'm sure they agree.
Let's jump into number three.
All right, we're going for music.
Yay!
A lot of highlights for me in music this year. I particularly been loving Australian music because I host an Australian music show. But also for me, because there's very little live music, all the live music that I'm seeing is all Australian because no international bands are coming, right? I think I've got a ticket for Faith No More in February. We'll see if that happens.
Good luck.
If they actually get here. But that'll be the first international act I would have seen in nearly 2 years since Elton John in March 2020.
Wow.
Yeah.
Got in there.
I know. So rewinding a bit, there's an artist that I've loved for many years. His name is Kofi Awusu Ansah. He is a Ghanaian immigrant. He came here when he was 3 years old, lives in Canberra. I used to live in Canberra. I saw this guy very, very early on the stages in Canberra with his brother, who was a little older than him, known as Citizen K. And he was a rapper and he got nominated for a couple of Arias, you know, really great career. Mm. All of a sudden, Citizen K's little brother, his name now being Genesis Owusu, he just took off. He got noticed everywhere. He's on like festivals, lineups, but still wasn't quite getting that, you know, attention that he deserved. But this guy is an artist. Like he's not just hip hop, but he does a lot of different art and what he wears. And he has these people on stage with him. So he's got a whole aesthetic going on. Anyway, this is the year that people finally notice him because he released this album called Smiling Without Teeth. And it's the one best album of the Arias. It is the number one Australian album of the year, like hands down.
Have you listened to it a lot?
I have. It was my number one on Spotify.
So yeah, right. So when you listen back, so like when you think of 2021 or when you listen to his music, you know, from this album in a few years' time, it'll take you right back.
It will, and I'm hoping it gives me good feelings.
Because
I listen to him, yeah, that's just, I get a good vibe. Like this is just an amazing album. And it's been a tricky time for artists not knowing when to release music in the last 2 years.
Yep.
Do you wait until after, you know, you've got stuff, and for artists, they're always writing, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't release music, then it's just like this massive backlog of stuff, and you just you'll probably never release it, you know. So I think it's important that artists do keep releasing music, just like TV shows have backlogs of stuff. You got to get it out. You got to schedule. So he did release it. He toured and actually did some shows in like April this year. 2021. So he made it. He made it out there. He got a few shows in, and it was, you know, obviously the number one live music show I saw all year. But anyway, Genesis Owusu, he's going to explode overseas. Everyone will know this guy, and he's still 23. Right. Like this guy, and he's going to be like, we've got Kid Laroi, who's like number one in the world. I mean, he's amazing. But Genesis is going to be in that sort of company very soon.
Okay.
And get out there and see if you haven't heard an album that you don't, or Australian music, sometimes go, what should I listen to?
Yeah.
You know, this is it. And it's not just hip hop. It's very accessible. It's not just like a hardcore hip hop record. Lots of really cool stuff. And his band, he's got this guy, Kieran J. Callanan, who people might know. He's playing in his band with him, and Kieran J. Callanan, awesome guitarist, but he just brought this next level sort of sound to the studio, which maybe Genesis didn't know he had or he could get out of him.
Oh, I love it when that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah.
Producers can do that as well.
Mm, yeah, certain musicians just have that ability.
So
I was nearly close to my number one, but I've got other stuff. But that's just, for me, one of the biggest highlights of the year.
All right, that's what I'm going to listen to on my way home today.
All right.
Yeah.
Is it a pair of braces on the front cover? What's the front cover?
Oh, he has, you know, the grills?
Yeah, like, is it grills? Okay.
So I saw him a couple of years ago, and he was at the Arias on the red carpet. This is before everyone sort of knew who he was. And he was like showing off his brand new grill and just smiling, this big cheesy grin. And it's just a thing. It's just what he likes to do when he gets out on stage. But you can't really sing with it. Like, it's a bit awkward.
Yeah.
So he comes out as a bit of a show and has it on there. He like quickly
nicks it off
and sings it.
Yeah,
I'm never quite sure what the fascination is of him, but, you know, it works.
Good on him. Look, Tom recognised it.
I mean,
this worked. Tom, number three.
Number three comes to us from the Discovery Channel.
Ooh,
which you wouldn't have expected, but
you and me, baby.
One of my true guilty pleasures this year was a show called Getaway Driver. And it was a reality competition show hosted by Michelle Rodriguez from the Fast and the Furious films.
Yep.
And Wyatt, I've forgotten his last name, but a top rally car driver. And basically, not Wyatt. So it was held at a place called The Compound, which is where the Defensive Police Driving Academy courses are.
Oh.
So this is where they train police to take drivers out. So what this show was is it was 24 of America's best drivers from all different types of racing and driving. They came with their own car.
Stakes are high.
And put it on the line.
Wow.
There are two exits. So you get two races. There's the daytime course where there's two exits and two people chasing you, or the nighttime course is only for the two races that did the best in that episode. Mm-hmm. And that's one exit, three pursuit cars.
Holy moly.
And it very quickly comes to light that the more expensive the car you brought, the dumber you were. Yes. Because it's not about power.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the size of your testicles. So there's a guy that comes in a Datsun and wins 3 weeks in a row.
No way.
Yep, because he does not give a fuck and will hit their cars. He will drive into the pursuers. He's there to win. And he talks about how it's the mentality.
Mm.
He's like, these guys come in here and they're amazing drag racers or they're great rally racers and stuff. I have driven away from the cops a lot. And what it takes is a focused concentration and knowing that your life depends on it. And he's like, if you can bring that here, you can win any time.
Wow.
So and there are people that took their defeat graciously.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were people that, like, it didn't occur to them what would really happen. And suddenly their $40,000 car is wrapped around a tree.
Oh, so they wrote some off.
Oh, like every episode had one to two cars written off, and I have three competitors. And you know, if you won the daytime course, you got $2,000. If you won the nighttime course, you got $5,000.
That's so a
it
lot
might
of money.
Cover a little bit of exterior damage.
Wow.
That's what I mean. Crazy. This was about bragging rights, and the like this guy, the Datsun driver, just. He's now a big deal.
Yeah. Do you reckon if they do another season, which is
I really hope they do,
they'll bring him back and like they'll have to incorporate him into it somehow.
I don't think so because they got him in the end.
Oh, they did,
and they took him out, and he ate his humble pie and was like, "I took my eyes off the price. I'll admit it. I fucked up."
Yeah, right.
Who's chasing it? Who's in the cop cars?
So it's you don't see them. They are blacked out.
Okay.
So are they actual cops?
But that could be like,
no.
Like a stick. Like these are like really good drivers.
Yes,
probably.
That's who they are. So these are not cops. These are the guys that train the cops.
Sure.
So they are an elite tactical unit. And, you know, they've got radios. They can talk to each other. They drive with their lights off and they drive, like, will come up behind you and then flick their high beams on. So it makes you panic as someone comes and pinces you this side.
Whoa.
So they are driving like a ballet.
It sounds bloody dangerous.
It's so dangerous. And people get hurt.
Yeah.
Like, one or two go home in an ambulance.
Wow.
Not like seriously critically injured, but like, you know, neck issues or stuff like that. So
everyone's playing to win.
Yeah.
That's full on.
It's
Discovery Channel.
Great.
Okay.
It's such an amazing premise. Like, I've never heard of anything like it before.
Yeah. And I just never watched something that had more genuine stakes for people because normally it's you're playing to win money that's not yours.
Mm.
Whereas this is more playing to retain something that
you've already got. Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's wild. Well, when I looked back on 2021, I had memories of watching stuff where we were like, can't wait for tomorrow so we can watch the next episode kind of thing. And one of those series was Nine Perfect Strangers from Nicole Kidman, right? Yeah, and I remember Mick talking about it and I was like, I can't wait to see the hot tub that didn't exist.
Yes.
But probably still is there, right? So I enjoyed knowing a little bit of the background history to it. But what I enjoyed about this show was it was – batshit crazy.
Mm.
All those people were mad. Nicole Kidman is scary crazy. And every episode you're like, what's the mystery? What's going on? Is this serious?
Mm.
I need to watch the next one to find out.
Mm.
And I couldn't stop. And, you know, it was one you didn't want to binge because you wanted to go away and have a think about it and be like, was that flashback? Was that her or was it someone else? Or who is she? Her accent keeps changing. Is that just Nicole Kidman not being able to maintain the accent or is it the character? Like, I loved it. I was there for the whole thing.
It was good, eh?
It was so good.
I really enjoyed it too. And I liked the fact that it was week by week and you couldn't binge it.
You had to wait.
And, the fact that it was filmed in Australia on a property that I know, yes. But I just also loved that it's, you know, it brought these American concept but into the Australian bushland.
Yeah.
Which is so obvious. I was like, there's bug gum trees.
Yeah, I know.
Free sake.
And they're pretending it's not. Yeah.
And the whole aesthetic. But no, I really made me want to start microdosing.
If any year that you could do it, it'd be 2021.
No, it's a thing. Like, I mean, I'm not condoning drugs, kids, but, you know, this show, and I looked it up afterwards, like I started researching it a little bit, and it's like it works. For some people, microdosing is a real thing, and it actually is a great like way to keep you level, you know, even keeled.
Yeah.
And I was just like, for me, that was just one thing I took out of it. I thought it was a really good show, and Nicole Kidman did a great job, even though her accent was a bit –
her accent was a bit interesting.
But, yeah.
But what I like, because you were talking about American actors, right, are all of the actors that were in it were playing characters that you had never seen them play before, like Jason from The Good Place.
Sure.
You were like, oh, he's being serious. Like there's no part of this where he's being weird. I can't remember the character or the actress's name, but she used to be in the scary movies, right?
Anna Faris?
No, the African American. Oh, you'd know her face as soon as you saw it. You'd be like, "Oh, I know who you're talking about." My memory of her is from the scary movie parody films.
Get Out. Well, she can Get Out. The other one, one afterwards. The same guy did
Us.
She was in Us. I'm pretty sure.
I think so.
And she's got his eyes, just like intense eyes.
So I'd never seen her in something where she was struggling with her past and who she is and how.
She played that well. She was a scary character too.
She was amazing.
Like, you didn't know when
she was
going to like snap.
Yeah. Even Melissa McCarthy was. She played no character I'd ever seen her play before. It was great.
Did she play someone palatable for a change? I've not much time for Melissa McCarthy.
Well. No, don't get me started on Melissa McCarthy. Okay.
I've dedicated enough of our airtime over the years to my distaste.
You two can have a Melissa McCarthy episode special later. Let's crank it up, number two.
All right. Look, here I was saying maybe we're having feel-good things this last year, and now I'm going to give you something that was so depresso.
That what you've been covering so far is feel-good?
I don't know. I didn't really. I've just picked
You've
really
gone for Squid Games.
I know.
The homosexual crisis.
Yes. Oh, my God. Okay.
I just realized.
But I have. This show, and I only watched it recently, and it was a bit of a revelation as a small budget TV show that went big, and it's so strong. It's called Maid, M-A-I-D.
Right.
And it's about a woman who has been the subject of domestic violence in America. She takes her small child out of the house in the middle of the night, scared for their life, and goes to seek, you know, shelter. Mm-hmm. She's in a small town in America, Northwest America. And it's a very, very honest and true retelling of what happens to a lot of women who are the subject of domestic violence. Mm. And it's friggin' scary, but it's also just eye-opening. And I hope that people who watch it or know about it just go, this is the sort of stuff that, you know, needs to be focused on. Like, the governments need to go and sort this out, provide more shelters, provide more money, do something, because this is terrible.
Yeah.
And it was so well written and acted and it blew me away. Like, it was seriously harrowing. Like, it was sad. And I was like, okay, how can I watch another episode of this? Oh, I've got to watch another episode. It was like that. But, you know, I had the notion or I had the suggestion that things get better. So you're sort of waiting for that. You're waiting for things to get better.
So you're watching in hope.
You are. And you're watching in hope that it can't get any worse. And in every episode, something worse happens. Yeah. And you're like, no! It's really, really sad. Margaret Qualley was the actress who plays this 25-year-old Alex. And she's the actual daughter of Angie McDowell. McDowell, is that right?
Oh, really? Yeah. Andy McDowell.
Andy McDowell.
From Groundhog Day. Exactly.
So she plays the mother, but they're actually mother and daughter.
Oh, that's cool.
For real life.
That's
really cool. And they play these two characters in this show. Andy McDowell is amazing. Like, she plays this batshit crazy woman who's been through a lot of self, including DV, and what she's going through in her life, what her daughter's going through. It's full on, but just such a really quality show, really quality. But you have to watch it with the knowledge that there's something coming that's better. You've just got to know that
Was that on Netflix?
It is. Yes,
yeah, okay.
Netflix.
All right. Yeah. I've seen it pop up as a suggestion. So
I don't know why this is my top five, but it's a show that I guess was sad, but I wanted to really watch
it. So well made.
Yeah.
All right, Tom.
Number two for me is Free Guy.
I waited for a long time.
That's why it gets on the list. It was fun. There were other films during the year that maybe were technically more better. There you go. The phrase. You know what I mean. But I give it the nod because I can't remember the last time there was a Hollywood film that original that wasn't based on something else that was a fresh idea. And it also gets the plug from me because of the respect that their marketing team had for that film. That every piece of marketing that came out for it was only from the first half of the film, maybe even the first third, so that the last third of the ever-escalating craziness, insanity around the action pieces and stuff was a genuine surprise.
What I thought was funny was the way I went into the film, you know, start watching it for the first 10, 15 minutes, I'm like, oh, only gamers would understand this. But no, it's not all gamers would understand it because like that world, everybody plays that game, right? So it's like your Fortnite pretty much, right? How many people play Fortnite? There were so many bits in that film that are completely relatable to anybody wanting to watch it who has ever even known what a video game was. Yeah, there are some bits for people who know a bit more, like those little Easter eggs where you're like, oh, that is impressive. Or, yeah, that's absolutely right. But it's totally accessible to such a wide audience. And it was funny that I came into it going, oh, I've got preconceptions. I just,
I mean, the audience. It raised some really big questions as well. And I love it when a film that looks bubblegum can actually pull off some really big thoughts. And that film had a lot of existential crisis.
Yeah, and it made you as the audience suddenly change your mind completely about particular moments and characters and headspace. Yeah.
And I stopped playing FPS games a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't have the anger for it or anything. It's the same way I don't listen to a lot of the new metal that I used to and stuff. I've moved past that, and a lot of the games I play are, you know, zoo building simulators or just very relaxed, controlled things like that. So I really respected and enjoyed that ending of it being the evolution of gameplay, that it doesn't have to be us imposing our will upon things. It can just be an observant action.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy that. Sort of, that's a grand revelation to end that sort of story on.
It's such a big deal now, is watching games as well, watching people play games.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Not as big as, you know, that's why Twitch is so popular, because you're just watching people play games. And I feel like this sort of highlights a bit of that as well, that it's, you know, just as enjoyable to watch someone play a game and talk about it and narrate it or whatever as they go. And it's nothing wrong with that. It used to be a bit of a stigma around, I reckon, but nowadays it's just like so normal and done.
I mean, it's odd to us because we're a bit older and that's sort of, but my daughter watches tons, and she will play a game while watching someone else playing the game. And
my wife had a freak out because I wanted to watch this, and I was like, let's just watch this. And she's like, what's it about? And I was like, no, just watch it. We should watch a trailer, and a trailer looks like entertaining.
Yeah.
And then she got a quarter of the way through and goes, oh, this is about video games, isn't it? And I'm like, yes. But I have to put up with you playing video games all the time. And now I've got to watch this movie about video games.
Oh, come on.
She got really worked up about it. But
Did she watch the whole thing, or did she walk out?
No, we watched it all. Oh. I mean, while she was on the phone. we got through it. And, you know, I just loved the ending too. I just thought it was really well
done. It was a great ending.
And Taika Waititi, a legend.
Yep.
Highlight for me. He was the absolute highlight of that. I thought that was so good. Yeah, Fall Guy. Free Guy, sorry. And Free Guy was we saw that trailer so long ago.
I know. It was supposed to be out like early in the initial stage of the pandemic.
Mm. We kept seeing the buses going by.
Yep.
You know, right. It's not coming out. My number two is a show that has been out for years and years and years, but it wasn't until the pandemic that I started watching it and getting really invested in all 18 seasons. I haven't watched all of them. Top Chef.
Oh,
that show's been around for years, right? Yeah. And I've watched the first few, which was great, particularly the first season, because it showed you what reality shows looked like and how they were edited back then. And you literally had one chef going, I'm not here to make friends. You're like, oh, that's such a cliche, but it wouldn't have been back then, right? And then watching the later seasons, I watched an All-Stars one, which was just before the pandemic started, right? And then the late season 18 was during the pandemic. And at the beginning, there were however many chefs, I can't remember, maybe let's say 10 or something. All of them were like, we've not been able to do our jobs.
Mm.
We've not been able to cook apart from just dinner for ages now. And to be able to be on this show and, you know, work and work at our craft and be in this competition, they loved it. And it was so different to the other seasons because they were all in it together, right?
Sure.
And they'd never, they'd never met anyone.
They were there to make friends.
They were there to make friends. And it was really like that. Like you would see them. I mean, it had happened in other Top Chef seasons, but you would see people actively going up to somebody else who was stressing out and helping them, even though they still had to do that. That season was really good. I'm sure you can find it. I found it. But yeah, a show that had been around for so long, like those judges had been there since the very first season.
Oh.
They have not changed the judges.
That's cool. I love that, you know, most reality shows don't last that long, let alone the same judges and not have controversies that might get rid of them. No, that's amazing. 18 years is comfortable? Like, or 18 seasons? Like, maybe was that 2 seasons?
I think maybe they might have thrown a couple of extra in there. Okay. But
I reckon there's multiple seasons. Just for Guy's Grocery Games is on season 28, they started in like 2014.
Okay, yeah. There you go.
What do seasons mean anymore? Nothing.
All right, we're going to go up to number one now. This is the ultimate. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. All right. this is going to relate a little bit to what you've talked about already, Leah.
Yes.
We're talking about Vikings.
Yes.
We're also talking about video games. We're talking about a game that has been my solace, my go-to place, my comfort food for the whole year. And this is a game that came out in about February in 2021. Little independent Swedish game developer who came out with a game, an open world game, but it's not. It's a world. It's a big world, but it's not open forever. Mm-hmm. But I was a big fan of Minecraft, right? I've played Rust, I've played open world games before, but this one just has something about it. It is just the aesthetic is beautiful. It's called Valheim, by the way.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of this, but I don't know anything about it.
If you like Vikings, this is based on Viking lore completely. And you even got little Odin gods popping up every now and then, scaring the fuck out of you, going, where did he come from? But it's a basic, hunt, mine, build
game. So get resources.
You've got
that.
And then you've got different biomes. So you've got the meadows and you've got the forests and you've got the fields and you've got the mist lands and, the snow and everything. So there's a whole bunch. Every biome's got its own boss. And you basically got to progress through. It's all PvE pretty much. You can go PvP, but no one does. It's a very collaborative game.
Yeah, cool.
And everyone's – I've got a group of guys. We all got together. We built our houses and we started venturing out. You get a boat and then you just start looking and just finding what's out there. And it's real. Scary, there's big serpents in the ocean that are gonna grab you.
So, are these serpents obviously like Nordic folklore?
Yeah, you're like sea serpents with multiple eyes, like they're freaky looking ones, and you can catch them too.
Cool.
And you can get their meat and whatnot. But it's just a similar way to Ark, if anyone's
seen Ark. Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dinosaurs,
the survival.
Yeah. Similar sort of concept. A bit different in that when you die, you lose your stuff and it's left in a bag somewhere on the map, but it stays there forever. So you don't have a limited amount of time to go get it. Because what can happen is you can go to another island and all of a sudden you die and you go, oh, crap, I've got to get back to that island somehow and get all my gear that I just dropped there. But the cool thing is that this whole community of Valheim people now have got like you can ask. You can go onto a forum and go, oh, I need help getting my gear back. And this guy can go, yeah, we've got a group. We're going to come and help you get your gear. So they can log onto your server.
Awesome.
They can help you get a boat and they'll go over and defend your body while you recover it and get it back.
So only you can get your loot.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
Actually, no, I think you're right. Actually, anyone can pick up your gear. But
it sounds like the community has decided.
Anyway. And so you've got a seeded maps and you can share seeds as well. So if you find a really cool map, you can go, oh, this is a seed for this map, and you can have that all same world. But for me, I love just a game where I can go by myself. I can go farm some wood. I can go farm some rock. I can build a little house. I can, eat some food. And the food dynamic's really cool. Different food gives you different levels of energy.
Oh, I like that.
And stuff. It's just relaxing. It's fun. And only stressful when you die somewhere and you got to go get your body back. But it's not a big deal. You've got to prepare for these things.
And you said you played with a group of guys. Like, are you able to talk in game or are you just
we just chat on Discord we keep sort of a knowledge of where you can see where each other is on the map as well. So we've got a private server where we can just play our own world. But you can play servers online as well. Just for me, I know it's not a groundbreaking game, but it got a huge, huge amount of following on Steam. I think 4 million users within like 4 or 5 weeks of release. So it was hugely popular right at the start, but they've only been drip feeding content over the years. So people have got a bit shitty because they're like, where's the new content? No patience, right? Like,
I'm assuming if it's an independent Swedish gaming company, they may not have a lot of people who can.
And they were in the pandemic too, so they were very all remote. So they're trying to develop a game remotely in a little Swedish town called Svakabka. I can't remember what it's called.
Sounds great. Yeah. Sounds like somewhere where a murder mystery would be set, a Nordic noir murder mystery. Valheim,
love it.
Sounds like a PC only game.
Potentially. Yes, it's not on Switch, it's not on PS5.
Okay.
I believe it's only on Steam.
Okay. All right. Tom, number one for you.
Number one for me this year was someone who first popped up on some viral videos, been making content through the pandemic and lockdown, and then put a lot of those songs, developed them into full-length songs and put out an album. It's Tom Cardy from Sydney.
Very nice.
He is such a legend. He's hilarious. And at several points this year, he pulled me out of a funk. By putting me into the funk.
Yeah.
So he's a Sydney he's not really a comedian. He doesn't do stand-up, but he's very involved with the improv theatre school. Mm. and he's, I think he's musical director there or something along those lines. He also makes podcast music, or he made the music for the Bondi Hipsters new TV show, this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So he's been plugging away for a little while, doing some cool stuff. But yeah, during lockdown, he kind of did the polar opposite thing to what Bo Burnham did. Bo Burnham was like, I'm going to work for a year on one big project and put it out and say nothing. Whereas Tom Carty's like, no, I'm going to make a dumb song that lasts maybe 30 seconds and post them at 6 a.m. on a Friday morning and see what happens.
And stuff happened.
And things did really well. And he's had some songs go super viral. He's got one, HYCYBH, which is sung an awful lot around our household. Have you checked your...
Oh, yeah. That's when you lost something, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I know that
Don't
song.
Want to spoil that if you've not heard it before. But, yeah, consistency. He's put out something every couple of weeks throughout the year. Some of them have just been tiny little throwaway things. And then in about September, I think it was, he surprise dropped an album. And half of these little videos that he'd done, he developed into a full-length song.
Nice.
And all of them go a much weirder direction than the initial video led you to believe. So I highly recommend it. Tom Carty's Artificial Intelligence is the name of the album. I check each week to see if he's dropped anything new
to buy.
He does. He's got a song out at the moment for Christmas called Not Quite Christmas, or Not Quite Almost Christmas Time, and that's taking the piss out of Christmas songs, as you'd hope.
He did this great thing on Triple J during the year as well, mm-hmm. where he would do sequels to songs.
Yes.
So he'd get a song and then he'd write the sequel. What happens next after this famous Australian song? And he was just so clever
with it.
Great
concept.
And you'll get like the artist sometimes, like other artists to do it with him and stuff. Like, yeah, he's
got big balls.
Huge talent. Yeah.
He's also been doing abridged versions of things of basically he likes to do the pitch meeting of someone, of an author pitching their book.
Yeah.
So there's one about how the Fellowship of the Rings.
Does he do it in a song?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not a song. It's just a music video, mm-hmm. and so. But that's one of my favorite jams of the year.
Yeah, Mr. Tom Carty. I must say, I don't think I knew him before 2021. So
I don't think anyone really
knows. You wouldn't know unless you're in the improv scene, maybe. Mm. But he's awesome, and I love that. This has been a big year for him, and exciting to see where he goes.
Yeah, for sure. My number one is one that took me by surprise. I think I've spoken to both of you off air about it. Shang-Chi.
Mm.
I went into that watching it going, I better watch it because Tom will probably talk about it on the podcast. I'll just give it a watch.
Can I just jump in and quickly say, I was going to say Shang-Chi, but I was convinced that you might say it, so that's why I picked Free Guy.
Perfect.
So
perfect.
I'm really happy this has panned out.
This has worked
here.
Out. This has worked out really well. That movie was so much better. I'm not better. That makes me seem like I thought it was going to be crap. I enjoyed it so much better than I thought I was going to. It had so much. It looked beautiful. There, I loved everything about it. I loved learning these characters because I didn't know. I mean, Mick, I don't know about you. I didn't know them, and learning about them, and also seeing these actors who have been in bits and pieces, awesome stuff, but like they're now like big time.
Yeah,
big time.
It's a big step up for a lot of people involved.
Yeah, and I really hope that they continue not only to be involved in Shang-Chi stuff, but also go on to do other stuff as well. But I think the main winner for me in the film was the choreography, because usually fight scenes I'm like, I'll probably look at my phone for a bit now because I get the idea of what's going to happen. It's going to look nice, but it's just going to be a fight scene. But I watched all of them.
Mm.
I thought they were brilliant. That one on the bamboo scaffolding.
Yes. Ooh. And that bus sequence.
Oh, yeah, the bus sequence.
With like the long shot down the side and him doing like seven different styles of martial arts in the space ridiculous. Of 20 seconds. Yes.
And you didn't know why, because at first you were like, does he not know that he knows how to do this? It was almost like, you know, Keanu Reeves with,
whoa.
Yeah, I know kung fu. Yeah. Yeah, it was that kind of thing. But, you know, a story unfolds.
It's not like Jackie Chan, his fight sequences were always so imaginative and tried something different all the time. You had to watch because you're just like, what are they going to do? How's it going to be different? Like, I love that sort of stuff.
This film was Jackie Chan stunt team working with the Matrix choreographers.
Imagine what he can do nowadays, Jackie Chan.
So we were talking a few weeks ago, very exciting news that Shang-Chi 2 is definitely happening and that the director is also going to be doing a Disney Plus series. We don't know what it is yet, but it will probably tie in because it looks like everyone Marvel end is so happy with how Fox Studios performed because that's where it was made. That it may end up being a bit of a setup for him.
Amazing.
Yeah. You know what I find funny about Fox Studios is every few years, not every few, probably every 10 years, someone in Hollywood goes,
oh yeah,
that's not bad. We should use that place.
Yeah.
Is that where they make Babe 2 Pig in the City? Oh, God, we've got to work there.
Yes.
It's such a weird.
That's where Titanic the Ride was.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, look, because in the sale of Fox, Disney now own that location. Mm. They have for a long time been thinking of, can we turn this into a Marvel TV studios?
Mm-hmm.
And Shang-Chi and Thor 4, reportedly. Yeah. Everyone's so happy with how the Sydney crews have done it. Great work, locals.
Yeah, mate.
That we're going to get a bunch more work down here.
Yeah, I was a bit worried that the lockdown might spoil that whole plan, but now so hopefully things will get back to normal and they can do all these planned. Every year they're planning, right? Like every single year there's going to be a Marvel movie film there for like the next 5-6 years.
500. Oh.
Yeah. 500? Yeah, maybe. Probably 500 years, yes.
Well done. That's
we made it,
that's
gang.
That's a very varied top five. I don't think any of us had the same one.
No.
That's
no
the same first one. Time.
No asterisks, no addendums, nothing.
Yeah. Good mix. It's a good mix too.
That's a great mix. And there's stuff in there that I'm like, ooh. Might go and watch Twitch or oh, I'm going to listen to that.
We're evolving.
We really are, which is good, right?
Mm. Yes.
Better evolution. Than stagnating.
Well, less shared brain. Today, this year was more about go and find stuff on your own.
Well, we had to because we couldn't see each other.
And I reckon as well because we all lent into what made us feel good because there's enough other voices. You said you're peer pressured into Squid Game. I wasn't, but I almost was. There's enough peer pressure around best of things that we end up seeing a lot of things that we think should be on our best of list. So instead we just we followed our fucking hearts, guys.
Are we going to remember to do that next year?
Nah. Nah. Back to normal.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Mick, thank you very much.
Hey, pleasure to be here again.
And thank also, you. Happy New Year.
Yes, you too.
And Tom.
Awooga!